Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A grain of rice.
Before you tip the scale, just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hello, people. How are you all doing into July? My great friend Fergie Toohey, teammate, clubmate, buddy, same age, told me they're around the end of June playing golf. They were only going to get 3 wet days in July. So I texted him yesterday morning. I said, how is the 3 days in July working for you, Fergie? So there you go. We even cancelled the game of golf yesterday. And we had Donald Trump's house and all on a freebie. Up there, Trump International class venue, about to so bad, we couldn't face out in it. So this morning, guys, delighted to have a special guest again, back on our one-on-ones. Larry is in the background there on sound, and we won't bring him in if there's anything controversial with Tipperary mentions. Actually, I have one beauty from under 21 final there. But delighted to be joined by Dunamagan and Kilkenny's finest, David Hurley. Hero, how the hell are you, man?
Oh, good, yeah. Kept busy at the moment. Picking fruit since about 6 o'clock this morning, but thankfully I've got this excuse to get me out of that now, so I'm happy enough with that.
So, come here, yeah, talk to me about that. You have a fruit, organic fruit farm, have you?
That's it, down in Dunamagan. Sure, look, that's where my whole life has been spent, pretty much all the summers, out picking fruit. My father would, he's a big old man, my mum's a Monaghan lady. So they would have moved to Loud and worked away with McCann, you know, Fice Bananas.
Yeah.
So they would have wanted to grow all the Irish apples in Ireland. So they asked the dad to pick a site somewhere in Ireland to grow their whole enterprise. So he picked, just happened that he picked Kilkenny and picked Dunamagan, and that's kind of how we get, they moved down there and grew all the apples. So I would have grown up with about 50,000 apple trees. That was the joy of that. As a young lad. So that's what your whole evenings were spent. You go to school, you come home, you pick away at it. And then as years went on, obviously Fice understood, geez, you can start growing apples a bit cheaper abroad. So the dad then, and between Fice and that, the dad bought the farm, cut down a good few of the apple trees, obviously, and just made his business. That's what he was doing then for the rest of his life.
And did you have to spend your kind of under 14 years chasing the local young lads out of the apple
There was a small bit of that, all right, yeah. You start building up the fences around the place and see a little trail of apples coming out certain gates off the farm. But no, most of your, like everything about, you know, your character or anything like that has kind of gone back. My father's he's a workaholic, pretty much. I'm not going to give away his age, but he seems to have found, I always say that, like, you know, in the Smoggies, when they're always searching for that oracle of youth, he himself and mam found it a long time ago anyway, so yeah. They're kept going. He'd be exhausted looking at them.
And like,
they're non-stop at it. And
it's a pre-6 o'clock start, like, would it be every day?
Look, it is for myself at the moment, because when it gets me out of the first feed, I obviously have a young lad now, he's only 5 months old, but the days kind of consist of getting up at 6 o'clock, you go over, you work away, and then you kind of get out of that morning routine. It gives you 4 hours away from the child at the start of the morning. And then you go over there, you come back again, then you do a bit of work and I'll get busier. It's kind of just fruit at the moment, strawberries at the moment. But as time moves on now, it'll move into the vegetable side of things. And then obviously Christmas is another massively busy period then as well. But you kept going at it. But that's from day one, school, college, I would have always just grown up and you're working away on your farm and from the early mornings from 6 o'clock pretty much till night time until you had to go off train, and that's what you spend your days at.
Yeah, hurling was the one thing that got you out of it.
It was, and you'd be thrilled with it, and it was, but the only thing is the father was, he was a strict enough man. Like, if you, I remember times there you'd win an All-Ireland on a I don't mean that kind of flippantly, like, but you could.
It sounded a bit flippant, no, Hero.
But you know, you could win it on a Sunday, and then you'd go out and you'd have your night, and then on the Monday you'd ask him. You know, you'd have to do your morning's work. You'd have to work till about 3 o'clock, and then you'd have to kind of ask him, maybe, you know, is there any chance you might give me a bit of a lift back into town? And the look of disgust, he couldn't get over. Like, you've done it. You've played the match. You've won it. You've had your celebrations. What's the day two about, like? But I'd only ever been a 1 or 2 day person growing up, which was, it kind of killed me, but it kept me grounded as well, I suppose.
You probably needed to choose the morning, the Monday at that stage, though.
That's, look, that was it. And between that, sure, everything was always over so bloody quick. Then you're back into either work or school. But we've won, you know, we won colleges growing up and county finals. And come Monday, no matter what, like, I remember winning intermediate title with the club back in 2000. And come 9 o'clock next morning, you're in Callan CBS. That was it. It wasn't definitely, there was never anything about taking a day off. It was fairly strict, but it kept me grounded.
Fair play. And there's a few. I was just talking to Jackie actually last night. He said, yeah, he'd often arrive to training with his strawberry shirt on, all right, coming straight from picking, you know. So, but he's another man that's sleep deprived at the moment. There's a lot of, you know, getting busy since you've gone off the scene. You're getting busy at the other ends of things.
Yeah, well, it was anyway, about a year and a half ago. Just quite, but yeah, I have a young lad there, Oliver. Say he was born on January 30th, but it just changes your whole life. I'm blessed. I bought a house down in Kilkenny. I've moved down to Kilkenny, got the keys the day of lockdown. So I'm pretty much just concentrating on that since. And that has given me great chance. I know, obviously, look, it's not to play down the whole COVID and everything that has happened, but it has been a blessing in disguise for myself to be able to have 5 months pretty much uninterrupted with the young lad and be able to kind of bond with him and see him kind of growing up. Like, between travelling back up to school up in Dublin, in Huntstown up in Dublin, I would have had to been up at obviously about 6:30 anyway. And then you're going to school, and then obviously managing Kildare at the moment as well. I would have had to probably pop off to Kildare on the way home, and then by the time I get back, it's probably 11 o'clock and it's just a routine again. And she would have missed out on a huge amount. So at least in the future, if there are any other kids, you'd like to think that you have a fair amount of experience underneath the belt. I'll never get this chance again to be able to experience, to pretty much have 6 months maternity leave.
So all the hype about teachers not really wanting to go back in September and all, there's none of that too. Well, my wife's a school secretary, so she takes your side on the defensive there. You actually do want to go back to work, you do?
I would happily go back in the morning. It's just not the same. Like, you know, I know a lot of people often ask me, would you like to go and be a principal? Like, it's not. It's just the hands-on in the classroom. It's getting in. It's having the crack, really, with the children as well. And, you know, trying to leave messages on the morning, kind of, we've a lad and connect. That's the kind of the form that we were using. But kind of talking into your phone and then sending up a message and someone sends you back a message, it's not the same at all. And you see certain children certain pupils can't get back onto you as well. And actually, you have no connection whatsoever. So
you were living in Kilkenny all along anyway, were you? And going up and down?
No, I was living up in Finglas, up in Dublin. And it's only then, everything has pretty much been rushed between having a baby and moving house. That's all happened within the space of about a month and a half. But I was just blessed that we said we'd move down and then see. I was going to spend the next 10 weeks. The hope was to move down around April and then spend 10 weeks commuting up and down to Dublin, see what it's like, and then see what I'd be able to do it in the future. Yeah. I suppose that was kind of taken away from me. So I am doing Kilkenny at the moment. And look, it's the most logic thing is that I will be looking for a job down here now as well. There's a few jobs coming up, and try and send off the application form and see how that goes anyway come September.
Yeah, old school principals out there, get tuned into the Irish Examiner podcast there. David is looking for something local. Is Huntstown a bit of a culture shock for a Dunamagan lad? Do you know what?
It was ideal. I would have found this. Obviously, just even when it came to Kilkenny, I found that it was great to go back up into a school where literally nobody whatsoever knew anything about hurling, and that
This is my time as Dublin manager now. You're talking about, like, so hold a minute here now.
sorry. In Huntstown, they hadn't a clue, but it was brilliant. You know, the staff I would have found that were excellent. There was times then things didn't go right in the match, but you'd be able to go back into school the next day. And And again, like the children were never going to turn around and go, geez, what about that ball there now that came in there in the second half? And the staff were just happy that you went and played a match, you won the match, and everyone was happy. There was no kind of, there was no great analysis on the game, and I loved it. It was just, you could be anonymous up there.
Even if you had sixth class and it was the All-Ireland final, like, would you be tuned
into that? Do you know
what?
They didn't say a thing. There was one principle anyway that I thought I got away with. It was 2011, and I suppose the goal of Lane wasn't the best in the world. But he decided to come out over the intercom anyway and say, well, he was a Meade man. He kept it fairly short and sweet. He goes, well, Lunt to Mr. Hersey on the match the weekend. We won't say anything about the goal. And that was the end of his intercom message.
Good man.
That was pretty much it now. But he, apart from that, the staff were fantastic. Yeah, you know, even in their support of everything, you know, and before matches. And the pupils just... they enjoyed it, but they didn't know a whole lot about it. No, kind of out there, there's a huge amount of nationalities. Very few played actual sport itself, so it was, and it was the perfect headspace to try and get away from the Kilkenny side of things and supporters, I suppose.
Would the club out there be Peregrines? Would it?
That's exactly it.
They have a lovely facility out there.
Fabulous, yeah.
Fabulous. It's stand and everything.
And there's a lot of good work going in. Exactly. Lovely standing there, right? That would be a perfect set. And I remember a few times there, even with Dublin Camogie, trying to get out to the likes of Peregrines as well. Because it's a small stand. You try and get a bit of a crowd there behind you. But then, sure, I suppose, between politics and one thing and another, it's always difficult enough to try and get the places you want to Dublin as well.
I know. Dave, I suppose we better mention a bit of hurling here and there. You were a kind of a boy wonder, like, in fairness, a three-year Kilkenny minor. That's fair going, like. But was that on the back of the Callan CBS success?
Yeah, everything seemed to... 1998 would have been a massive year. It started off, definitely. I would have been on the under-14 team, Kilkenny under-14 team, with Michael Rice and Tommy Welsh in 97. And then 98, Brother Damien, the late, great Brother Damien, would have had that college's team, and I would have been in goal with that. And that kind of, that really kicked on absolutely everything then. That kind of put your name out there, especially with the team that was in it. You know, the likes of Noel Hickey, my brother Colin, but Jack O'Cork and John O'Neill, James Royal, Jesus, Candice Hickey. It's only kind of now you really look back. There weren't really household names at the time. We just had a brilliant team. Kieran's had all these, you know, they nearly had five or six counties represented on their team, and they had borders and so on, but we nearly had five or six families. You know, we had Corcorans, we had the Clears from Ballycallan, we had the Hickeys, obviously myself and the brother as well then. So it kicked it on. It put you out there, I suppose, a little bit more. And then when it, later on that year, we won the county minor, the A title with Dunamagan, which was a complete shock. That was, you know, we barely...
That wouldn't have been heard of a few years before that.
This was the great James Stevens team that at Tony Forrester level at under 14, they would have had 17 on the under 14 panel, on the Kilkenny panel. So this is where they were at. I'd say the closest any team had ever come to them was probably about 20 points. And then it just so happened on the day, we'd Noel Hickey centre forward, but we ended up putting him back full back. Now, he was a full back anyway, but we ended up putting him back there. And just between everything, we brought everyone back and just... like, it wasn't sweep or anything. We just put all our stronger players. My brother was out midfield. We won a few frees and just popped it over. Kept popping balls over the bar. And it was complete freak. But from that then, kind of winning the two of those. Then, I suppose, luckily enough, Jimmy Dunn, the actual our club manager, became the county minor manager. And that wasn't the reason, though.
You're not suggesting politics was involved here.
I spent years trying to defend this there for different lads, all right. But, I was very fortunate then as well to get on the minor team for something that I would have always thought that, you know, I would have always seen it as the great lads did that at underage. It was a difficult enough thing to do. I would have always seen the rest of the lads that did it as being absolute geniuses. Never myself, I suppose. But it was brilliant to kind of have that monopoly. I went for the 3 years minor and then into the 3 years under 21. So I suppose the natural progression was then that you'd go in kind of senior-wise then. But that had to wait my turn then for that.
Just to touch on the 21s, I mean, obviously you won two All-Irelands. Am I right, Dave, yeah?
Yeah, 3 and 4, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the 204 beating Tip in Nolan Park a week after losing the All-Ireland, like, 21 points. Was that a sort of a... I know you couldn't think it at the time, but looking back, was that a sort of a catalyst of what was to come in some ways? And I look at some of the names on that team, you know, But Richie and Che, Mick Finley, Connor back.
Yeah, and Tommy. Like, but even going back to the 2003 team, like Martin Fogarty and Mick Dempsey took over that year. And no disrespect to any of the rest of the managers that we would have had, but the very first training session, they would have brought us in to Spring Hill, and I still remember vividly that I drove Tommy over to Spring Hill, and just on the way out, Jackie, we got the sense that Jesus, something different here. Like, just between us, like, I know it's easy kind of looking now and seeing the amount of medals that a lot of lads in Kilkenny have won and All-Stars and so on, but we had nothing. Like, I played 3 years minor with Kilkenny and never got to a final. Cork beat us in their final year. That was the year Kieran Murphy managed to bag 3-3 in the All-Ireland semi-final. But we were fierce. We were medals deprived, hugely. I remember Martin Fogarty then. Remember, he had one clip, and I don't know what he was trying to aim at, but maybe it was the Kieran's lads and the amount of medals that they had. But he had this frog on a lily pad on the pond, and he put like one medal on it, and then he put another medal on it, and eventually drowned the frog. And what he was trying to get at was, you know, sometimes if you have too much success, it can kind of, it'll end careers. But he had a message. I think that was kind of the Kieran's lads to kind of cop on. Like, we have a decent team here. If we get our heads right, we can achieve brilliant things. And it was just a different style with Martin. I don't know, he was a fantastic coach. And Mick Dempsey brought in the kind of testing, which we never would have done before in the past, and the strength and condition. And obviously that would have then fed into the senior side. But there were two very extremely enjoyable years. And obviously the lads that played on that team, the likes of Jackie and JJ and Christ, Tommy, Connor Phelan there for years, Aidan Fogarty, and then you had talked about the 2003 team or 2014 then with Richie and Fenno, Power, Owen Larkin but they were just, I don't think losing the All-Ireland was really, in 2003 it was just getting to a final. Like, I remember we bet Dublin in, and again no disrespect to Down, but I remember Tommy texted me the next day, goes, we're finally going to get to a final. Like, it was just the feeling of that. I still remember getting it in my kitchen, getting that text message, and it was, we couldn't believe it. Like, that's where we were after coming from. Absolutely had no sniff of an All-Ireland. Leinster's barely getting to Leinster's, but we generally, I'd say we're always underprepared. We just about did enough to win in Leinster, and then we come to an All-Ireland semi-final, and some better prepared team would just come up with a tactic, whatever, and they'd end up beating us. But Martin and Mick then kind of changed things up, and that's where we ended up.
Was it on the back of that, in Harrow, that Cody brought in Mick and Martin?
It was, yeah. Ah, Jesus, yeah. They like, Martin would have known all the different players. I'd always kind of say Brian has a unique talent in picking up potential senior managers and bring them in under the wing, and then maybe as years go on, they just tend to fade out a little bit. So there's, Martin was brought in, all right, and then he left the panel in after 2013. But he's done that kind of, even with McGarry, would have won two all, or would have won all Ireland with Ballyhale, and
yeah,
you know, he's not even muted now at any about taking over the senior job at all. And Derek Ling would have been another one that would have been seen as potentially taking over, but he's always had that good job. I know he kind of asked Henry in at the start of the year, and Henry declined. So
Henry's waiting. He let DJ off.
DJ is another one, under 21 manager. Yeah, brought him in underneath his wing. He's clever enough what he does, but Henry's standing in the shadows there, ready to take over. It's
hasn't lost a fucking match as manager. Like,
incredible.
No.
Nah, Jesus, you know, it really is. It is when you think of even the two of them. Like, you could be managing or coaching for the next 100 years, and you still won't have won what Cody or even Shefflin has won within 2 years. It's scandalous.
Scandalous.
But, getting back to Martin and Mick, they would have been brilliant. But it's funny seeing them back in 3 and 4 and what they did with the players and bringing them on, and great crack, and there was huge banter in the dressing room. And I think that's what we needed. We needed good coaches. We needed to have a kind of a style of play. But then, it's funny, by the time I joined the panel in 2008, the edge was kind of knocked off. You could always see that. You could see that with certain players as well, that, but even management, that the person you knew back then in your younger years or in your youth, or even playing with McGarry or Ling, by the time they got to kind of the senior setup, you knew things had changed there. There was a kind of a very, there was a small bit more of a distance then
And were you brought in briefly, Haro, around the time of the 21s with the seniors?
I was brought in 2003 when Gary broke his ankle down below in Cork. And PJ Ryan then was put in goal for the 2003 league final. That was the mental one, 5-17 to 5-16, up in Croke Park. So I was brought in for a short while. I was there the day, the Leinster semi-final, where the wind that shook the door with Charlie Carter walking out. I was there in the dressing room that day, and then just got a phone call after that and kind of go, McGarry's back. That's the end of that. So I kind of went into hibernation then for...
Could you describe that Charlie Carter moment to us?
Charlie was just, he was on the bench, but there was a lot of, like Brian McAvoy, there was a lot of frustration around that time as well. But I think a lot of lads
Philly
couldn't
Larkin.
Understand. Philly Larkin was there and Brian McAvoy as well left. But I remember one day there in training, Charlie got a dunt and he fell over and just walked off the pitch. That's me, I got a bit of a knock there, I'm heading off. Like, you could see that, there was, the tension was building, definitely. But at the same time, there was such an array of talent, Christ, coming up, like, it was huge. And I think it was on the back of, a lot of lads, even around the Kilkenny as well, would have looked at Conor Field and probably go, why is Conor playing? And Conor would have only been probably 1 year under 21 at that stage. But Jesus, Brian has always kind of maintained that if you're playing well in training, that you'll get playing. And Conor was flying it in training. But I suppose that frustration would have been kind of around Kilkenny. Why isn't Charlie playing? Charlie would have been a hero. And yet Conor wasn't. He was only starting off in his journey as well. So there was all these things leading into it. But again, it didn't faze it. And like anything, once you win the All-Ireland, everything else is swept under the rug. Man, that's
everything's all right once you win. Yeah, tell me about it.
It is. No matter what you do in life, once you win, everyone forgets about everything else.
And come here, Haro. You, like those few years then from 04, we'd say to 08, like what, you weren't playing football, did you? I know you played for your club, obviously, like in that point.
Yeah, no, I know I've always played anyway, football and wise from underage up. It would have been a frustration there. Like I would have always been, it would have been a frustration that it wasn't taken more seriously. Like I was in goal. So when you're in goal, back then you stayed in that small box, but then getting a chance to get outfield. I would have been fit and athletic, I suppose. That would have come from the farming as well, and stretching away. You'd never have any kind of injuries, but you got a chance to get out the field. I would have played away with the minor team and then the senior team, and it was a massive honour. I would have in 2000, and we would have played a few Tommy Murphys.
Yeah,
I say we kind of played Tommy Murphys. We showed up. I'd say if there was a breathalyzer on the pitch, pretty much it would have just broken it down. It was absolutely. It was carnage for a few years where it just wasn't taken seriously. Like, I remember playing a Tommy Murphy Cup. We played against Antrim on a Sunday, and on the Saturday, Kilkenny were playing Galway, and we turned up, parked a car in Castlecomer. As I was walking past the first pub to go up to the next pub, we're getting a bite to eat. The captain shoved his head out the window, followed by the vice captain, followed by one of the county boards. And that was it. That was the start of it. We went up, we realised we had 13 players. We picked up two lads that were on the beer in the pub, and we headed off with our 15 lads up. Everyone had bottles. Myself and Sean Flynn, the cornerback, didn't. I know that sounds a bit dry, but I was just thinking, like, we're taking on a senior team. If we can't beat them sober, there's little chance that absolutely tearing the arse out of it for the next 24 hours is going to give us any sort of an edge. But having said that, lads... I remember again, I won't say the captain, vice captain's name, but they eventually woke up beside the swimming pool, indoor swimming pool up there in the Armagh border. What do you call that place? Is it the...
Oh, the Carrickdale.
That's the Carrickdale. Yeah, they woke up there at 8 o'clock the next morning. And I think a couple of sun loungers beside the pool. And we went off and played them. And then after about 10 minutes, we were 1-2 to a point up against Antrim. Everything was absolutely buzzing. And then... the effects wore off. I don't think we scored again. But at one point, a lad went down injured, and a selector who was smoking a cigarette had to look like he was about to get up off the bench. He wouldn't have been the fittest lad in the world now, but thankfully your man got back up again. Your man sat back down again, absolutely raging, and he put out a cigarette. But that was that. And that was kind of the low point. Then we kind of hit. Then 2008, they said, right, we're going to get a team together, and we ended up heading back into the National Football League. And I was made captain, which would have been a massive honour. It would have kind of gone against even the club. We hadn't won the county final, so... But, which wouldn't have been seen. You normally win the county final, you get the captaincy, but I suppose I would have taken it seriously enough, even my days in St. Pat's up in Drumcondra. But we went on and we won a league game against London, which was massive. It happened before the league semi-final with the hurlers. Tip bet the hurlers. We won the football. We bet London. And it was incredible.
Is there any truth in the rumour, Dave, that you got kind of a call-up while going for a pee at half-time in a football game by Mr. Cody? Is there any truth in that rumour that you might come in training next week or something? There's a double header or something like that. And, oh, I was told a story like that you were just on your way to the Jacks and you met the senior hurling selectors.
Oh, that would have been 2008 then. Yeah, I was with the footballers and we're heading to the toilet and that was it in Langton's. And on the way back out, Brian just called me over. Now, I kind of knew at the time Richie O'Neill, the third choice goalie, he was after doing his cruciate. And you know, I figured, look, he might still stick with the two goalies. But again, just on the way back, Brian just said, David called me over. And then he just, because he does, he kind of started looking you up and down and kind of going, you're looking fit. Without saying anything, you know, but just kind of, you're looking fit. And then there's silence. You didn't have to kind of fill the silence. But then there's an awkwardness of going, am I saying the right thing or am I not? But he said, look, again, like, yeah, I'm sure he says to a lot of lads, we'll bring you in for a short while. If it goes well, it goes well. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's the extent of that conversation. But that was huge. Like, you know, after that, you're talking about that 2004 team. At one stage, I think 13 lads off the panel of the team that played that day were brought into the panel. It was only myself, Shane Hennessy and Kieran Hine that weren't. You're always kind of thinking then, Jesus, I can't be that bad of a hurler that out of all those other lads that were brought in, that I'm the one of three lads that weren't. But I suppose it did coincide with, again, I wasn't playing well enough at club level. And then thankfully there was a club all-star. There were club all-stars in Kilkenny at the time and I got it in 2006 and 7. Got the goalkeeping one. So that kind of lent itself then to kind of maybe getting a call-up, a justified call-up then in 2008.
And you had to go in as you third choice then. You wouldn't even be togging the day of the games, like, would you?
Oh, you would. No, back then you could tog as many as you want. Right, but like, yeah. It was an unusual 2008. Look, I know I have a medal from it, and it is brilliant. And to get your first medal is fantastic. But I spent every single training session on the sideline. And what I used to, the extent of my training was, you do all the warm up with all the lads and that, and then when the match went on, there was this kind of like FBD insurance sign on the side of the pitch, up in the top right hand corner. And I went up, and every day I just chipped away with it, a bit like your man in Shawshank Redemption. I just chipped away. This was my thing to do. So I'd go up and I'd smash another little bit off this FBD insurance thing and work away at it. At the end of the training, you go in and you get your meal. And it was hard enough to even bond with the lads.
Dave, you know, Hurley. He chipped away. He chipped away at the FBD until eventually in 11, he found himself a goal.
But that was it. Like, I remember after 2008 final, like, you were buzzing, but you didn't kind of have your click or connection there. But I remember, like, even winning the final was phenomenal. But I remember going back to the City West, I was a single lad, and you know, no one else, no family were there. The family didn't, my sister would have supported me, but my parents would stay at home and they'd watch the matches that way. But I went back to the City West and I remember just buzzing, just feeling like that this is going to be the best night of my life. No ties whatsoever. It's going to be absolute carnage. Like, I the medal probably didn't mean as much to me as the night of an All-Ireland final, of just what you're going to, just the crack, really. So I remember then drinking, they were naming their All-Star team, and I went out and had a Jaeger with Willie O'Dwyer and Duncan Cody, Brian's son, there at the bar. They were on the panel at the time. I said, I'm going into the toilets here, and I'm just going to have a quick nap. That's it, 10-minute nap. This is kind of something I generally tend to do sometimes if I go missing. Just have a nap, and then you wake back up again. Because it can be, you know yourself, you're up at 7 o'clock, it's a mentally draining day, the whole thing. So I went for my nap anyway. I woke up and I was, you know, you get a rush of energy. You're like, this is, oh, you know, that was incredible. And I went to get up anyway. The legs were slightly numb and I went a bit unusual. And then I checked the phone and I saw, I said 0642. Obviously the energy came back into legs, walked out and realized I'd slept absolutely straight through the first night. 7 hours on the toilet there, City West, But it was just, it was the loneliest walk I've ever done, going back up to the room, just kind of going, it just, this couldn't have happened. But probably the saddest part of it was, I checked my phone, I had only one missed call off a private number. Now, one person realised I was gone, missing, no one cared. So that was my involvement in 2008, anyway.
This third choice goalie, I'm getting fucking more sorry for him as he goes along. Yep. Okay. You get in 11 after the failed five in a row. You big failures, you. but no, you get in for 11, and that's just force of form. Just your time had come. Just you push past PJ at that stage.
Do you know, it's unusual. At the start of 10, like, you know, again, I suppose you have to kind of get into the head of Brian Cody. And I always kind of think that there should be some sort of college course, a psychology kind of course, where people should just study him. And everyone should just tell, there should be books written about him, because I can't get into his head. You know, I talked about Martin earlier on, and in 2008, I didn't do anything. 2009, then I would have been in. It was Richie came back from his cruciate. So PJ would have been in goal for one. He would have been in goal for the 40 minutes of training. And then I would have switched over at halftime with Richie. And then I was kind of getting I picked up a kind of a cartilage injury in the knee. And I was kind of getting frustrated with everything. I'd started off brilliantly at the start of 10. And I would have said then to Martin Fogarty, kind of going, is there any chance, Martin, that I can play a full game in training? Because I'm clearly the sub goalie. You put me at number 16 every single day and have done all year. Which that was me stepping above where I should be stepping. I should just kind of keep stum and play away in the corner there and do whatever you do. But Brian came down to me a training session later, and he just goes, how do you feel you're getting on? And I said, look, I've lost a little bit of confidence, obviously, with the injury to the knee. And he just cut me there fairly straight. And he goes, you have lost confidence and you're no longer definite on the match day panel. So that was...
That was it.
So that was it. Like, that was that. So in other words, you've no confidence. You could be, you're potentially going to be dropped. So there you go. So it's the character to stick. So that was kind of it. It kept going the way it was going. And then when we lost the final, Brian will always see that as an opportunity then to spice things up. And he came up to me then after I got the operation during the off season, and he'd come up to me the very first training. They were having a test, I think it was just before Christmas. And he just goes, how's the knee? I went, grand. He goes, how many of those goals in the final would you have stopped? That's right. I just panicked and went, 3. And he went, just nodded. And that was enough for him. And like, I'd imagine.
And that was just regular goalie bluff, like.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, that was, you know, if I said, oh, Jesus, no, I don't think I would have stopped anything, you know, then he probably would have went, right, where's this lad at? But PG had broken an arm, which, Jesus, he had broken a bone in his arm in 2007. I suppose his puck out, Brian would have seen that the puck out now wasn't clear in the half back line. And he would have probably he'd pick up something that we're not now clear in the half back line. We need someone with a bit of a longer puck out. There you go. It could be as simple as that. And that was the end of me. And the end of PJ. And I got in then, and go right for you, go wrong for you. But 2011 just happened to go very extremely well. And, going back to your question, you're like, well, was it timing or was it whatever? But I would have played in 2011 and we would have won. In 2012, we would have won. And then 2013, the very first training session in Nolan Park, whatever that was, January, I would have got called into the doctor's room with Brian and Martin Fogarty. And it was just like, change happens, David. And it was like, I was oblivious to it. Like, I was like, all right, yeah, well, I'm sure they're going to be chatting to everyone here now, and they're going to have a little message for everyone. I kind of got the hint after a few league games when change happens means you're not in goal and Owen is in goal. But that was it. It was just a case of change happens. He just went, McGarry tallied a few more years and PJ came along, change happens. PJ tallied a few more years, you came along, change happens. So I walked out. I still remember joking about down at Langton's going, what's he on about, this change happening? What? No clue what he's on about. But I soon realised, all right.
And did you know, I would say, like, obviously Owen is very well touted now as the best goalie in the country, let's say, you know, at this stage, and there's so many angles to his game as well, as, you know. But could you feel like you were after winning back-to-back All-Irelands, like, in goal, could you feel this guy opposite you in training those nights. This guy is really, really good here.
Yeah, I still moment of stupidity. I 2012 semi final, I came out for a ball against Lara Corbett and I hesitated. I went to rise a ball, should have flicked it out to the side, but I went to rise it. Lara bumped into me, and Pat Burke picked up the ball and stuck it in the net. So anyway, that was that. Second half, then two quick balls in the first 5 minutes hit the cross, hit the post, and came back down around the square. So it just looked, there was about 5 minutes before halftime and after halftime, it looked disastrous. And I'd be fierce critical on my own performance the whole time. Like, geez, you know, and it's funny, you know, you come in at halftime and Brian just comes over to you and goes, are you okay? And just shout at you, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm grand. Like, oh, it's okay. and that's it. And you go back out again. But stupidly, I at the very next training session, now I'd be a fierce kind of excessive extreme person anyway when it comes to training and everything in life. But if train was at 7, I'd arrive. Sorry, if train was 7, you'd normally arrive at around 6. But as time went on, I started arriving at 5:30. And he came out then early to me one day, or that next train, he goes, what do you think? And I said, ah, yeah, look, it's, yeah, you know, made a mistake there. And then he just went, oh, what's Owen like? Just casually, what is Owen like? And I went, and I said, and now Owen had played in goal minor at 2008, but he hadn't done a whole lot since. And I said, Owen's like a sponge. And he was. I said, he's phenomenal. Everything I do, Owen does it. And he's picking up things really, really quickly. But he has so many brilliant qualities. And I said, whenever that, this is the one that'll kill me for life. I said, whenever that lad gets in goal, no one will ever take the jersey off him. Now, that, like, I think if you ask me a question, I'll give you an honest answer. And that to me is, I couldn't, like, Owen just has this incredible athleticism. Like, I could spend that whole year and did getting caught up on kind of trying to improve footwork and trying to improve everything. But just Owen has it. And you know, even the ability, I always wanted to catch a ball going over the bar. That was just my thing. I'd love to be able to catch a ball going over the bar. But Owen would just do it. Owen's probably he looks like about a foot smaller than me. But he just has that ability, which you would have seen against Watford that year in the semi-final, to be able to jump about a foot above the bar, catch a ball and jump out. It's only kind of, you know, since you kind of realise these things that I'm going to have certain things, other lads are going to have certain. We all have different body types. You know, you'll have an 8-pack, Dalo. I'll have to work my arse off to, but I'd have never have your size. You know, I'd never have your strength whatsoever.
You'd be well off after lockdown.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, different lads have different body types, but I would have got caught up in different things. But Owen just had the package. It was incredible. His wrist work, hands, footwork. He hit the ground, he'd be back, straight back up again. The only thing I felt he was kind of lacking, and probably lacked a little bit then in 13 and even into 14, was just a bit of experience to know when to come and go, or to talk to the backs and organise the backs. That's the one thing I knew I had. I was very good at communicating with backs, trying to close off positions and trying to have them like little, you know, like Alsatians. That when you say go, you go. And I say stop, you stop.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I played behind Noel Hickey for years. Still the best player I ever played with. Whatever you told him to do, he did it. He was phenomenal. But like, Owen just lacked that small bit. But yes, if you're asking, did I know he was brilliant and what he was coming? 100%. And unfortunately.
Just to take you back, Heros Mabit, you know, you said like the 2008, you know, it was brilliant. Your first All-Ireland medal, you were there, City West, etc. But then, was the feeling a whole pile different in 11, like then for you?
It's 11 was just, for me, it was, I kind of knew that, I was the only person that was, I know it sounds bad, but I was kind of happy when we lost in 10, because I knew nothing's going to change until there's a loss at some stage. He's not just going to randomly make a change for the sake of it. It generally comes off the back of a loss or a draw. Then he starts making changes. So I would have seen that as an opportunity. And 11 was just an amazing year. Everything went extremely well for me in all the games. In anything that they played, the first Wexford game, made a couple of saves against yourselves in the Leinster final, made a nice enough save then as well. And
You made a great save that day.
And then, again, then you're looking at, you know, the All-Ireland semi-final against Waterford, picked off a save, and it was the final that, I suppose, was a turning point in my own head, career-wise. I would have let in a goal, but instead of, I think the difference between a lot of the great players and the good players is that they're able to mentally put behind. And I think that's what one of the great things about Owen is, that he could drop a ball into the net then 10 seconds later, just pick off a top corner save. Like, whereas I got kind of caught up, and it started kind of in the dressing room afterwards, where, you know, it would be a harsh enough environment, but I remember Ned Quinn coming over to me, and he was about to shake, he was shaking hands with the boys around me, and then he came over to me and he went,
Jesus.
I don't know if I'll shake hands with you now. You nearly cost us.
Jesus.
So that was the start of that.
That's only the county secretary, like.
Yeah, but you're just kind of going, right, Jesus, okay, that's fair enough. And then we went into the Sunday game back in the City West, and I was nicely well on again. It doesn't take me to get take much to get me well on now. But
don't tell me you fell asleep in the toilet again now.
No, I didn't. I possibly should have, and I wish they had. But I started shouting at Michael Lester as he was setting up. And he clearly knew I was probably a little bit merry. So he turned around and goes, get him up there. And so I went up with Eddie Brennan onto the, and that to me now was a massive thing. I would have loved all my life just to get on Sunday game. Because I just thought, you grow up looking at G-boys on the Sunday game. And you just kind of knew you made it. It was part of an All-Ireland. If you got on Sunday game, you made it. And so I went on anyway. And then Michael Lester was trying to come up. He was talking off camera about Brian's tactics, about what Brian did. And I was like, sir, that you're like, none of that is tactics. That was just, you know, he was trying to make up that this score came from that and that hook came from that. And I was like, man, you haven't a clue. Like, that's, none of that was tactics. None of this was spoken about. This is completely off the cuff. So we went live, and then he went, David, you've just told me about Brian's tactics off air. And I went, sarcastically, I went, oh, Brian's an absolute genius. Jesus, if there's ever a wonderful tactician, it's Brian. Like, you know, like, win your own ball and, you know, kind of get, you know, whatever ball comes down, win your 50-50 battles and stuff like that. He said, oh, he's an absolute legend. So that was that. And Eddie Brennan was beside me, and I could see him kind of, you know, cut the mic, kind of, you know, Jesus, this is going. But I thought this was grand. The crowd were laughing. Everything was going, you know, happy enough in my head anyway. And then I came down, and I just sat down in my seat, and I was talking away to Noel Hickey. And Noel Hickey is there. If you ever talk to me, he has a Scooby-Doo laugh. But he was laughing away anyway. And then Mick Dempsey and Martin called me over anyway. And then it was kind of a case of, do you realise, you know, and it was kind of this, and it kind of killed the vibe a little bit, but they were like a massive amount. They were like, do you realise you nearly cost us this All-Ireland today? Do you have any cop on that if, because of that goal, all the work we've put in all year, everyone has put in all year, could have been gone because of you. Do you realise that? And I was like, and then kind of, you know, the happiness is kind of draining out of your face. Like, I'm sure they were, the two of them were unleashed to kind of go, sort this lad out fairly quickly. He's getting a little bit ahead of himself. And that was it anyway. And then that could have killed the buzz a small bit that night. But then I became psychotic then after that. Like, you know, it kind of came back, and I became psychotic in all my training then 2012. I became the most extreme person in everything that I did. Like, I'm talking, you know, there was all body, you know, there's body fats. Everyone did their body fats. It was a new thing in, but I started getting it down to 5%. I started realizing nothing will ever get in the way of me stopping this or costing the team a single thing again. I'll do that. Like, you know, if I had a fun, one of the lads reminded me there recently, if there was a fun size bar, I would have halved it. Had that maybe with a cup of tea, that would have been one day, and then I'd save the rest of it for another day. But it was everything. Like I say, training at 7 o'clock, you turn up at 5:30. Jesus, just trying to get yourself in the best shape. But then I started picking up injuries and stuff like that. But I remember we played G in 2012 in that Leinster semi-final.
Oh, yeah, hockey does, yeah.
Yeah, hockey G. And it was kind of built up as the two kingpins in Leinster. We'd played out that 11-goal bloody thriller in the league and all that and so on. And then we went out and played well. But I remember running out in that field. I'd built myself up so much to be the best of the best of the best. I hadn't... if you'd... throwing a ball at me from 50 yards, I would have went into the net that day. I had nothing in me, nothing in the system. And I remember then just thinking, I let that whole 11 and the goal and all that kind of stuff get to me. Stupidly. Should and never think, have, but did.
Yeah, would you blame yourself more for that? Or, you know, I know, obviously for us, it was a rarity. It was the first time in 81 years, but Davey obviously let in the stinker in 95, just before half time. But I mean, that night, it would have been, you could have said whatever you wanted, because people were just delirious. Yeah. Maybe it's just, is that just more, maybe that's that Kilkenny
ruthless attitude to keep winning and that kind of thing?
Would you
blame yourself for letting
I
that
would.
Get you?
I'd be extremely competitive. You know, a perfectionist in everything. Like, again, I remember that day, if you're talking about 12, and I kept a clean sheet against you in the Leinster semi-final, and then reporters kind of came over to me afterwards, could have been the last let in or first let in, and they're like, what did you see in the game? And we could have got bet by 100 points. I was after getting hooked that day, and that to me was gone. That game was the worst game of my life, and so on. So it was just a case that unless I had this absolutely incredible day, I was a fierce frustration, fierce kind of, I'd let everything just get to me then that kind of even. And it's a rare thing that I could look back in a game and go, my God, love that. Absolutely brilliant. It was perfect. But it was, I think it's on the biggest stage as well. And then kind of, even in Leven, and again, you'd love to have won an All-Star and stuff like that. But then, you know, on papers after, like, if I could go back in a time machine, the one thing I'd say to myself is just burn every single paper. Don't go near it. I would have bet myself up about it. And then I got myself back again in 14. Then I got back on the team.
Yeah.
And got my headspace right and got a wonderful headspace.
You were in a different place in 14, I'd say, when you got back in, after the whole 13.
In 13, it came up, I got key, like where you kind of go from your highs of, I suppose, 11 and 12, you still won. And I picked up a couple of injuries when I started looking like a cyclist. I had nothing on me, absolutely skin and bone. And I'd torn the rotator cuff and I'd gone off and got a keyhole in that in April. And when I came back, I was back down to third goalie. They brought in another goalie. So it was now outfield. So you kind of went down with that and you kind of had to come back with the attitude of just positive. I figured coming into 14, I was just going to give absolutely everything I could. I knew I was retiring at the end of the year.
Yeah.
That was out the gap, no matter what. And I just kept just everything was just positive. Just I set up the players' kind of WhatsApp group just to get a bit of buzz going. And just figured, geez, if you're sub-goalie, you may as well be your glorified mascot there for 90% of the year. But it was just keeping that positive vibes going the whole time. And that's why it was great then when, in fairness to Brian as well, he did give me every second game at Owen, and he said that. You're playing goal, Owen playing goal, until I messed up against you again. Sorry, against in the league up in Parnell Park. Lost the ball in the lights, went into the net, and that was me finished then against Galway, the Leinster semi-final. But Brian can be quite ruthless like that as well, that Owen probably didn't have the best Leinster semi-final or Leinster quarter-final against Offaly. And then when the chance came up and he went down injured in the first 5 minutes of the Leinster semi-final, Brian just turned around and goes, David, you're on. And it's probably still one of the biggest highlights, the fact that he had the confidence of turning around and going, I'm putting you on in the Leinster semi-final after 5 minutes of a game. You know, and then the funny thing is, and again, this goes back to the psychology of Brian. He came in after the dressing room, amazed. Like, you know, he was coming over and he was joking, going, who's this new guy? You know, and you're like, look, you know, and he was big smile from ear to ear. And I think he was nearly thrilled, I suppose, in a way for myself that I didn't start letting negativity creep in, which is very easy for subs to do or as they get on. And again, in the Leinster final, he came in after the Leinster final, Alan Nolan had gotten man of the match, and he came in and he goes, why didn't you get it? And again, my instant reaction was, is that sarcasm? Is he saying that I messed up because I did mess up at something or whatever like that? But then against Limerick, we're in Carlton House, and he turns around and he goes, don't think for a second you won't play against Limerick. Now, if Brian Cody says that to you, you feel on top of the world. You feel absolutely amazing. And I felt amazing going into that match. And then the heavens opened. And it's just
amazing. It was an amazing day for a game, Harold.
It was the most bizarre game I've ever in my life played. Like, normally you have five goalies hurdles, and, you know, four of them are just there for show, kind of. But I'd gone all the way down into the cool tech at that stage. Like, and, you know, anything that looks or remotely looks dry. And I kind of, that day, I decided in my head that no matter what, I wasn't going to give them any score. So even if the ball's going over the bar, I'm going to take it down. And so in the day, like, I took down a couple that were going over the bar, and there was a few skirmishes around the goal. Still, I suppose, looking back, and I did there recently look back in the game, probably pulled off two of the best saves I pulled off and took down about three that were going over the bar. But the carnage that erupted after I took down the ball just looked like mayhem around the goal. So I've gone then afterwards, and I was nervous enough about this. And then the very first training session back, Brian came over and goes, "You look nervous." Sorry, I kind of been looking at him out of the corner of my eye, trying to see. And you'd often do this kind of going, "Is he looking at me? Is he smiling at me? If he's not smiling at me, you know, is he annoyed at me?" And you'd start reading into things that aren't even remotely there. And then he came over and goes, "You look nervous." And I said, "No, I'm not nervous." He goes, "You look nervous, though." I went, "No." And he goes, "Well, you seem nervous. Why are you nervous?" And there'd always be these little diggy things going on. Like he'd always try and nick away at you. I don't know why. I think he knew I would react. Like even earlier on that year, we were having a one-to-one meeting. Mick and Martin were to my right, and they were asking me questions. And as they were asking me questions, Brian was eating a scone, but he just kept going, "You're too old." And I'd look at him, and he'd look down. And then I'd look back up again. I'd go, "Right, obviously, that's a bit strange." But I'd look back over to the right to Martin and make him continue on the conversation. And Brian would go again, "Too old." And he'd look down again. So this, like, kind of wonder, what's this going? And it's like, even another one there is the GPA. I was 2014 was probably my best year as playing away. But the GPA wanted to come down. You know, like they do when they want to have a chat with the lads. And so I organised. I was a GPA rep. And came down anyway and organised it in Langton's, and I got a text message then. It was just before the we're playing Offaly in the Leinster quarter final. I got a text message off Brian anyway going, "David, call over before you leave." So I was like preparing myself, you know, going, "This is me getting back into the goal." So he sits down and he goes, "What's going on in the meeting over there?" And I said, "Well, GPA are there, like, and they're doing their, you know, they're just talking away about stuff." And he was like, "What are they talking away about?" And I said, "Look, they're talking away about, you know, what courses for lads, and maybe if they need whatever, whether it's psychology or there's some grants there, or if lads are thinking of retiring, what they'll do." And then he just came in straight away and goes, "I'd say that you're interested in that now." and I like that. I remember Mick Dempsey was there putting butter on his chips there to my left, and himself and Sling and McGarry were there laughing away. And I was thinking, oh, Christ, you know, it was an awful kick in the teeth going, Jesus, you go from thinking you're going to be back in the team to this. But like, that's it. Like, that's the Jekyll and Hyde with him. Like, you never know where you fit with him.
Yeah.
And over the next while.
Like, look, Nam was a bit the same, I suppose. And I think I firmly believe that Cody picked up a lot on the way. Look, Nam worked. Obviously, yeah. You know, he'd way more success, and you can't never dispute any of that. Like, you couldn't compare them in terms of what they won. But he was a bit the same like that. You never knew what he was thinking. And it seems to me like you the topsy-turvy relationship with him from the get-go. Like, I think I read somewhere where you said the best chat you ever had with him was after you rang him to meet him to say you were retiring at the end of 14. Like,
yeah, and but I would have rang him, and I don't know what got into my head. I was thinking, Jesus, for Brian, you know, Brian, can I have a chat with you? And he was like, "Yeah, no bother at all." And, you know, and then I said, "Should I meet you over in your house?" And he goes, "No." I was like, "Well, man, Grant, I'll meet you in the Spring Hill." But I look at, even throughout that whole year, like, it was going extremely well until it started going kind of on the rocks then again. Even, I suppose, to kind of sum it up, even the night of the homecoming, I would have been dropped for the final and all that and that kind of crack now. But coming up to the homecoming, it was an open top bus. And I don't know, I was nearly full of frustration, just of kind of, Jesus, like, show some bit of emotion to the fact that I've been dropped. Like, even walking in out of Crow Park, he was walking ahead of me, and I was thinking, just turn around there, say something. Just say,
yeah,
I don't know. But I remember he opened the door and he wouldn't turn around. He just, you know, held the door open without turning around. I was just thinking, right, Jesus. And there was probably a little bit of kind of frustration growing up or brewing up in me, but we're on the open top bus and we're coming past Nolan Park, and the place was absolutely electric, and the crowd was mental. And I started shouting up at him, you know, saying, "Hey, Brian," you know, and which is an unusual thing to do anyway when he's at the top of a bus, to start calling him out. I goes, "Where are all these people back in November down in Mooncoyne when we started training?" And he was kind of looking at me. And then he was whispering away to Mick Dempsey, and the two of them, you could see, were just kind of going, this lad this lad is reaching his end fairly soon. You'd see the lads in the bus were just going, oh, sweet jumping Christ, this is, it's not going well. And he was getting even more, the closest they ever got to finding out how he, what he felt of me or felt or thought of me anyway, was in Langton's afterwards when Shefflin was getting a big cake. Shefflin, at the homecoming, the Monday night, they came out, Langton's came out with this absolutely gigantic 10 cake, an absolutely mother of a yoke. And then they came over to Brian with a cupcake 10. And Brian was sitting there, he was sitting with his back to me anyway, and they gave him the cake and he started looking at it. And he said, what's wrong with you, Brian? What's wrong? You look a little angry. What's wrong with you, Brian, there? This kind of stuff. And he started looking at me, he goes, do you want the cake? And I went, yeah. And I started licking the top of the cake. And he goes, all right, good man. And he goes, do you really? I said, you looked angry. And he goes, well, do you really want to know what I think? Do you? And I said, well, yeah. And he says, do you really honestly want to know what I think of you? And I was just about to get to finally, after 7 years, and then his wife Elsie gave him a nudge and he goes, Brian, stop. And that was it. I don't think that was as close. I would have felt he was about to unleash hell. God knows what would have come out of his mouth, but that was that. And then I met up with him in Spring Hill that late, that I think it was November anyway, and I kind of went, right, I'm retiring. And then he calmed down. I had a great chat with him for 2 hours. But I think to sum him up, he's everything to anyone. Whatever you think he is, he is. You think he's the most generous guy in the world and the most charitable lad, he is. And I've heard amazing stories about him. If you think he's the most ruthless man in the world, he is. Absolutely. I can pay testimony to that. If you think he rules like a tyrant, well, then so be it. If he's a great man manager, well, some people, if they think that, well, then so be it. But the phrase that he kind of said to me there was in Spring Hill is that he's not here to build friendships, he's here to build a legacy. And that to me sums him up. Like, yeah. couldn't care less.
Would you have felt that was across the board, or Hero? Like, that was like the, I know in Jackie's book now as well, he didn't really letter him with praise, like in terms of one-to-ones or that, but would you have felt there was some lads like I know, like, you know, you hear the stories over the years and all this crack, like TJ was going to walk away in 2012, only Henry talked him around. Imagine TJ Reid not being there, like, since 2012.
Yeah, well, that came out the back of, that came the back of, we had just played Galway in the Leinster semi-final, and we were playing, you know, in the run-up to the All-Ireland quarterfinal, he got dropped, TJ got dropped, and then the All-Ireland semi-final, we were away in Carton House, and we were watching clips on Tipperary, and watching clips on ourselves, and then we just had TJ Reid clips. So we just turned around in the middle and kind of went, TJ, you're wondering why you were dropped the last day, here's why. And it was two awful clips of TJ. There was one where he went up for a ball, missed it, and then just kept running, just did a big massive loop around, and that was it. Richie Hogan actually had it, and Richie had three lads on him, and he was trying to shake him off. But TJ had done this loop around and just gone off. And that was it. And then there was another one where Éire Tannion was running. TJ was running after him. And then Éire Tannion skipped past someone. And TJ gave up. And it was kind of a case of, there you go. And that, it was kind of on the back of that going, if you're wondering why you're potentially getting dropped, it's because of your attitude like that. Now, having said that, TJ played against Tipperary, played against Galway the next two games and won an All-Star. So again, once you win, that was genius.
Yeah, like, and I'd be, you know, my own way of, I'd be horrified to do that to a lad, like what it might do to him. But as you say then, there'd be other lads out there who are the critics of the managers and whatever, and who wins, and that's the way to do it. Ruthless. Reid never, you could say, a lad now out, you know, a layman would say out, it wouldn't have been there, but would have heard the story, said Reid never looked back after that night in Carton House.
Of course not. But and that's it.
It's bizarre. It could have broken him as a guy as well. Like.
And that's it. Like, and again, you have to be like that. And I wish, kind of, you know, even in 11, that I was a small bit mentally stronger to just take the bit of criticism. You know, I'd stepped over the mark by kind of slagging him off in the Sunday game. Bizarrely enough, that was never actually on the clip. They edited it out. So, yeah, if you ever go looking for it, you'll never see it. For some reason, it was edited out the next day. And a lot of lads did crumble, and a lot of lads did fail. You know, a lot of lads were never seen again. They were dropped for a match, and they were just kind of just pushed aside. And again, like I say, in 2014, if you didn't come with a positive attitude, well, then you were just cast aside. And a lot of lads had bad attitudes after 2010, and they would have had one-to-one meetings. there's enough of them out there. And Brian would have went, okay, off you go. You know, you're annoyed, fair enough, off you go. And that's it. And because you just had a conveyor of young lads coming through nonstop, and that kind of fed off the 2003 and 4 under 21 teams. And then it would have fed off the 2010 team that won the under 21 All Ireland, you know, the TJs, Richie Hogan's and the Colin Finley's and so on, Conor Fogarty. But, you know, he doesn't have that anymore. You know, he doesn't have an under 21 squad that's coming through, or two under 21 teams that are quickly in succession coming through All Ireland winning teams.
I remember dropping Gerry Quinn, like, for some disciplinary thing, as you would with Gerry, around 2005 or early 2006, knowing for definite I'd be bringing him back because I hadn't a half back, a wing back like him in the next parish in Clare, do you know? And he was the kind of guy that could mark Eddie Brennan and mark these guys, you know? And we eventually met Kilkenny in that year's All-Ireland semi-final, and Quinn, like, defying to the last, like, but I couldn't afford. I wanted to lay down a marker, and I did drop him off the panel. Like, I let him go for about 2.5 full weeks. But then I just said, look, between interventions, between Father Harry was a selector, me, and, you know, I would have thought, and as well with us, like, as well, not to be talking about us now, we're talking about you. And, look, man, like, as well, like, there were some guys after 97, let's say, there were 23 or 4, and they were virtually gone. You could count on one hand the amount of championship appearances. And these guys had won 2 All-Irelands on the team nearly. And their confidence was just shattered, like, between being riddled in training, like, you're a disgrace, or you're whatever, like, you know, and dropped and taken off and just not even brought on in the following day. And you could sense the confidence draining out of these. And I was captain, like, for a long period of all this, and trying my best to talk to these guys to say, look, don't let it get you. You know, you're a great player, you've proven it, and that kind of thing. But I would have felt we lost 3 or 4 crucial fellas that might have got us one more All-Ireland had they held that confidence. And I know you got a lot of them.
I know we did, yeah. But there is a bit of foresight kind of looking down. And I would have thought that smallest bit more man management. I think Brian is brilliant. But if he, what he's achieved and the way he's achieved it, you know, you can't argue with it. But a small bit more man management would have, for me, would have kept a few of these younger lads going. Like, I know Richie Hogan's brother, Paddy, after we lost Gee in the replay, or after we drew with Gee in the first match in Port Leash. But again, Brian would have showed the first 20 minutes before the next, between the match and the replay. And he would have just watched the first half. And, you know, Paddy got hooked at one stage, and then he went to pulling on the ground. And I think he hit the ground rather than the ball. And Brian just turned around, like, throwing the hands up. And but you just knew, at the end of that year, Paddy was the only lad dropped. Off that. So even though we didn't get to the All-Ireland semi-final, Cork best and All-Ireland quarter-final, he just singled out one lad, and he could do that. And, you know, maybe if PJ had pulled off a couple of those saves in the 5 in a row, even if we'd lost, but he pulled off 2 saves, maybe PJ would have stayed on for another year. You just don't know. But sometimes something gets into his head, and then nothing will take it out. And a lot of the selectors will kind of say that as well. He'll come with his team. They'll all come with their teams. Their 4 teams. He'll have his team, and they'll wait there till 5 in the morning until his team is picked. So every single time. And the selectors will say that. You know, they're jokingly kind of going, Jesus, what, you know, your man's playing half back, and they look up, don't look at me, nothing to do with me, kind of. So he's tough man, like, but he's, then again, he's won. So you can't argue with it, Anthony. That is
the thing, like, and it's the same with our man, you know. We won 2. For the first time in 81 years, so that for every Clare person is just, he's the Messiah.
Did you get on well with him now? Would you have a bit of a crack, you know, a cracking trainer, or was it just no?
Like, not really, like, to be honest. Now, he'd savage us constantly from January right through. He might let the guard down if he won Munster, have the crack bit with you that night. Then as we won, maybe the second Munster meant a lot to him, beating Tip. Sorry, Larry. But they did. He'd driven that down our necks. But then even beating Waterford in the 3rd one, like, that really... But then from the All-Ireland final, or whenever the season finished and we went on a holiday, he'd be great crack. Do you know? He'd be great old fun and that. But like that, like, he just gets something in his head. I remember one time he's saying to me, sometimes he was confiding me. And I don't mean confide is the wrong word. But he'd ask me something. Then I thought, Jesus, why is he asking me this? Like, but he wasn't even listening to my answer, I swear. He just, if I came up with something that clicked with him, you know, I often gave him three or four reasons why as an answer to the question. And I know that it went in one ear and out the other. Whereas there was one or two times where, you know, something I might have just said, well, I don't know about the way we're carrying on there. And you're right. And clicked and gone. He didn't want to. He thought of it, didn't straight away. I didn't think of it.
I
wouldn't have won anything for you, only for him either, though, Hero, you know, and that's where me, probably you may not have won All Ireland's only for Cody either. So that's my take. Well, one famous one with Lochnam was like 98 when the saga with Offaly was going on, and the Sparrow was moving on at this stage. He was up around, gone past the 30 mark, and you know, the legs weren't hectic, and they were bringing him on as a sub, and he says to me, Dalo, I'm going to start the Sparrow the next day. Oh, it's the blue light. This is just down the corner. How are you? Oh, geez, you look, you're really fit and all. Coming up to the match, he'd really blow you up, you know? And he says, I'm going to start the Sparrow on Sunday. And Lord to mercy, his father, John James, was alive at the time. And I think he died later that year, actually. But he said, I was just outside with the father this morning. He said, when you reach a certain age, you're better off starting and coming off when you've given everything because you're warmed up. Sitting down there for 45 or 50 minutes is no good now for the likes of Sparrow. And I just had bizarrely, like, I was coming home in the car with the Sparrow, like, and I says, you're starting on Sunday. And the Sparrow, I said, am I? He says, and he hadn't been starting, like, yeah, I think his father said something to him there about that it was going to be too tough on your body to be sitting down for 55 minutes or whatever. Jesus, that's great to hear anyway. He says, like, you know,
bizarre people. Yeah, and you'd have him. Oh, Christ! I mean, even again, in just thinking up of what you're saying there in 2014, before the All Ireland final against Tip, he was like, "You'll all pick a player because we'd heard a Tip." But this is right before we go out onto the field, and I know you're talking about tactics and all that, but this is 10 minutes before we're going out onto the field. He goes, "I hear Tip might be running all over the place, so each of you pick a player." And he goes, Paul Murphy, who are you going to pick? And Paul went like, you know, I'll pick number 13. He goes, okay, JJ, who's fullback, who are you going to pick? I'll pick the 14. Grant, Jackie, who are you going to pick? I'll pick 15. So they just picked exactly who a number would be. And the tactic was that when the ball goes out dead, you go back into your position. So even if Shamie Callan runs out half four, JJ was going to follow him out there. But then they'd get back into their positions. This was just thought of it anyway. So, of course, the first ball that went out to play was a sideline. So Bubbles just put the ball back down and next thing the ball's in play again. So now this whole thing, now lads don't know, was that out of play or is it wide out of play or is it, you know, is a free out of play? So we get torn asunder and run ragged all over the place. And then back in Nolan Park, then we had a meeting with just the backs of how we conceded as much as we conceded. And like that, he was going around looking for the answer. But he was looking for the answer of somebody. And Jackie... I didn't want to come up straight away. And Jackie said, well, maybe we shouldn't have, you know, just decided this tactic 10 minutes before we went out into the field. And I doubled down on it. And he turned around to me and goes, you're only in here to stir shit. And I was like, Jackie just said that. I just doubled up on it. Like, you know, but at that stage, it was kind of, I was gone from goalie back to sub-goalie. So nah, you're only in here to stir rubbish. You just stay quiet until someone would kind of go, well, maybe, you know, we need to toughen up and maybe we need to, that's all he was looking for, maybe we need to toughen up and get tighter and beat them. And he was like, yes, there you go, now who said that? You're playing the next day.
It was a complex relationship, Harold.
Sure, look, it's all gonna be in my book. I'm bringing out Join the Dots, a colour book on myself and Brian here.
But then, Hero, you nearly went straight away into management with the Dublin Camogie. Well, not quite straight away, but you took a year maybe. But
I know, yeah.
And would you have taken his traits? 3 years then, would you? I mean, you were very successful. I mean, you brought him to the first semi-final in Donkey's ears, like. Would you take some of his traits?
I did. I took the very simple. Went in and wouldn't talk to any of them. That was rule number one. Don't talk to them in the dressing room. Don't talk to them in the, or say the usual, are you ready today? Be ready. Well, I wouldn't talk to them in the car park. I was selector, which Shane O'Brien had brought me in the selector. Right. So I in those 2016. So that was my first thing that I did. I just said I'd be as rude and as distant as I possibly could. Just distant, I suppose. Not rude, but distant. And just come in and keep barking every so often. And that was it. And that was my job. Until Michael O'Grady, wonderful man.
Great guy.
Trained, saw. He's an amazing man. He's my pretty much my mentor, has been. I still ring him the whole time. But he just came in and goes like, you're not Brian. You can't do what you're doing. They need to be spoken to and obviously be with respect. And they need someone that's going to actually coach them and bring them on and get down into the nitty gritty. An old bark at them is not going to collectively bring on this group. And he was dead right. And then it just, I kind of saw a few things that, which Shane was there, that we could improve in 17-18. Then I took over as manager and like that, it was... But, you know, I just, a huge amount of credit went down to the likes of Mike, and I'd Sandra Tarr and John Matthews in with me again that year as well in the background. But there are people that knew the club scene, and it was brilliant just to... I was very fortunate to have Michael O'Grady as a mentor. He's done a huge amount for myself just in the background and have him for the years that I did. But it was a huge learning curve, the whole thing, all right. But it was very enjoyable.
If I had a regret, Hero, I'd have to say... For Michael, and Michael brought me off playing Shinty back in 93, myself and Disparo to Inverness, for, and this was going to be the highlight of my career, like. But I should have tapped more into Michael, but my attitude very much going to Dublin was out with the old, in with a completely new brush, you know, and Michael had been there in and out, and sure, he was incredible in support with us in terms of the Friends of Dublin Hurling and all that, but I probably should have tapped into him a bit more, I would feel. But I'd have had a good relationship with him now. We never had a cross word or anything like that. But I'd say maybe that he felt that maybe I didn't make enough of them as supporters. And maybe I could have had a stronger personal relationship with him. And I think I should have in hindsight, you know. But then, David, like, I suppose, through no fault your own, and I know from... great friends in Dublin, obviously, with Camogie connections, were really disappointed with the way it ended for 19, and you had big plans for 19, and just like the strength and condition was just changed without you being even informed.
Well, that was it. Like I knew John Matthews, who had been with me and done a brilliant job there for the previous 2 years. Yeah, he was moving on, and I'd spoken to the county board about this and said to them, look, I'm hoping to get someone else in if that's all right. And they said, no bother whatsoever. And I was grand. Now, they had muted that at the time, that they were hoping maybe that they might get Philly McMahon in to do a job with kind of the underage teams and so on, and try and have some bit of continuity with everything going. And that's fair enough. Philly was a big name, and it would have been huge for Dublin Camogie as well. But I just... I knew he wasn't the right fit for myself, put it that way. And I went off and I found myself a new strength and conditioning coach, Stephen Harold, who I have now at the moment with Kildare. Phenomenally, he's in as a performance coach with myself. But it was just, then the kind of, I said, look, it's okay. I might use Philly McMahon's gym if that's all right. Like, if that's what you still want to do, to have everyone still connected with Philly McMahon, if that's something. And they said, yeah, that was no bother. So I checked everything out. And next thing, I went over to Philly to check out his gym. And he went, but I'm in with the seniors. I'm in with everyone. I'm the strength and conditioning coach. So then I went back to the county board and they're like, yeah, no, Philly's in. We signed a contract back in July. And then, so there was a mass bit of confusion going, well, why did I spend the last 6 weeks trying to get myself a strength and conditioning coach, trying to find facilities? And I said, I'm not going to be working with Philly. I'd prefer to bring in my own man. And they went, well, we've signed the contract. So it's either you go with Philly or you're gone. So that was it. It was done. So it was after a year of coaching and 2 years of management. That was the end of that. It was kind of just done over the space of, I'd say, less than 24 hours. You kind of went from manager to, nah, we're done here. So, there was big plans because the group were, I don't know how many times I would have said to the group, I bloody love this group. Like, they're fierce passion. They were fantastic in what they did. The commitment levels of the girls, and it's unfortunate that in a lot of developing counties, there is a huge turnover. That's the major killer. I think a lot of these counties, whether it's in Camogie, whether it's outside the top, I suppose, three, the Galway, Cork and Kilkenny, and then kind of, you know, obviously you have the Lee McCarty and as you start getting down into Joe McDonough, then you start, you know, Eddie Brennan would have lost a lot of players there with Leash there as well.
you just don't know what panel you have from year to year. And whoever can actually keep the players together generally is going to go on a fair old run. And I would have lost a lot in 17, would have lost another load in 18, but then got some back. And then in 19, they were all going to come in together. But it went exactly the way I thought. Sure, after a year, then they broke the ties with Philly anyway in the end. So it was just, I suppose there was no winners out of the whole thing.
Yeah, probably their loss more than yours even, you know. I know you'd have liked to finish the job and gone taking them as far as you possibly thought you could. So that's every manager's kind of thing. So Kildare came knocking then, Dave. And that was, like, there is, I would see sometimes that we waste our times with, you know, I know Martin's coaching will be great and he'd be taking up from where Paddy Butler was and going around to some counties. And for me, that could be wasted a bit and some counties are never going to reach a level. But for me, Kildare, you know, we obviously know the Joe McDonagh counties, right? And
yeah.
And we need to get Offaly back now and you don't need to get them back this year. But like, there is hope in Kildare though. You know, Phil Nagales and all that would tell you that.
There's a huge amount of talent, and I would have, again, when I was training the Trinity team, we would have played them back in a Welsh Cup, played against Kildare. I couldn't get over it. And said, I don't know how many times, every set player seemed to be about 6 foot something. Massive, big, strong, well-built lads. Strength and conditioning seemed to be excellent. This is when Joe Quaid was over them back in, it would have been probably 2017. And you know, they were phenomenally big, and they had the skill and the strength, and it was just, I saw this as a massive opportunity. You know, again, they were just off the back of the winning the Christie Ring as well there back in 2018. It was just fierce and fortunate. Like anything, then it's about the players and trying to have continuity between one year and the next. And I just found that when it came in, there was 32 lads, and then all of a sudden we lost 16, which was a fair old chunk of a panel to try and start rebuilding from then again. But I'm probably blessed in one way that I, because everything happened fairly quickly, probably the move from Dublin Camogie over to Kildare, I didn't know who I was missing. So by the time I did know who I was missing, the club, you know, we were very happy with the panel that we had, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I didn't have enough time to kind of start moaning. You know, like when you were with Dublin, you'd have a fair idea who's gone or who's not after coming back and so on. Probably only looking at one or two, but Kildare had a good few, but I'd be very happy now that we kept on to most of the panel off last year, which is a massive success for ourselves. And you can see the team is building now again nicely. There's a lot of young lads. Nace are obviously a massive club. You've our Clark and Selbridge and Clane and the likes of Manute there as well. So there's and I suppose Kyle Love then as well would have lost a good few of those lads. But there's a serious amount of work going in at county board level. Colin Nolan there as well, and John Dorn, Paul Dooley, these lads in, and Decky O'Toole. So they are starting in development. I see exactly what you mean there about putting the resources in. I do think Kildare will eventually, they will make the breakthrough. There's no doubt about it. They are a county on the up. It's just a matter of making sure that when you do go up, that you have enough of a conveyor belt coming behind. Because what you do see now is just a yo-yo. Like, you'll see like Carlo going up to the Liam McCarthy, getting bet and coming back down again. Do they have an under 21 team to kind of keep that going?
Yeah.
Whereas you see the Kildare Miners last year went on a very good run and got to the Leinster semi-final. And this year they have a fairly favourable group then as well, or a favourable side of the draw as well. So they could get to find themselves all of a sudden in the Leinster semi-final. So we start getting a few of these lads in, it's massively important. But that's why it's also massively important that we get a few games in the Christie Ring this year. And it's not just a case of a once-off game against Offaly, which is like, the only way any of these counties ever are going to develop is if they play matches.
David? I know you went public on this. Why did? What was their justification for going knockout on the Christie Ring?
There is none. We didn't hear anything back. I would see that they have to have everything ran off by the 15th of November, because then they have the ceremonies coming up, and then they have Ireland semi-finals, and they have quarter-finals and hurling and so on. So Croke Park is going to be full up. So they want the finals in Croke Park, and there was only one time slot, and that was 4 weeks after we start. So I suppose anyone would have said then, well, then to have 4 weeks, we're going to have a break between the semi-final and final. So that means we can only have three games. So quarter-final, semi-final, final. But like, you know, that kind of did away with the group games. They could have easily done three. It was supposed to be four in each group. So three group games and the top team go into a final. At least you've got three games. Or even the old system where you win two games you play two games. If you win two of them, you go into semi-final. You win one and lose one, you go into a quarter-final. If you lose two, you go into the relegation final. We've put in that proposal to Crow Park. It still doesn't change the date. The only thing it means is if you get to the final, you play 4 weeks in a row. But I'd say any county player is going to take your hand off to play 4 weeks in a row at this stage, rather than just a once-off game, and then that's you done. Head off into relegation there and try and develop. Because with all these kind of younger lads, any of these developing counties are all dual counties, with probably football being the most prominent sport in the county. It's extremely important then that the hurling, like it would be brilliant that if Kildare did go out and, you know, they got a few games obviously with the football there this year, but so did the hurlers. Same weekends, and you have a bit of an atmosphere around the place, and it's the only thing that's going to develop these players, these young, and it is a very young panel that's there at the moment, which is great to see, and they are coming along lovely. So I hope Crow Park see a bit of sense, see the positives in that, because otherwise it's an awful blow to the system then for a lot of the counties. And the, you know, even the Nicky Rackard managers have been on since the whole thing has started and kind of just complaining as well, that it just goes against everything that they've been trying to build over the last few years.
Yeah, the mind boggles, to be honest. I know if you told us 7 or 8 weeks ago we'd have Christy Ring and a Joe McDonough and a Lee McCarthy and the rest of the competitions, we'd probably taken your hand off. But it just boggles that it's to make it a knockout after all that.
But honestly, I wouldn't mind if it was a straight knockout and Joe McDonough was a straight knockout and Lee McCarthy was a straight knockout. Yeah. I'd say fair enough. But Joe McDonough played 4 group games and then a final, so there's plenty of weekends there. Like, they could throw it around. So it's yeah. Look, it does, the mind boggles. But then again, there's plenty of time, and maybe we're hoping and see that they were just draft fixtures and that they might change again. Maybe we only got the draft ones. Who knows?
Get on to Mick Finlay there and see if he'll back you up there. it's a tough draw for him as well. Your old pal, like, you know. David, we've taken up enough of your morning. We got you away from the strawberries for a few hours.
Thanks for that.
I've no doubt, given the time and the backing, you'll make a success of that Kildare job, because you know, even from talking to you and from knowing you from the past, that everything goes into it, and probably have learned, as you have told us about in the last hour and a half, that you've learned about yourself and about ways and picked up on the good stuff and tried to leave some of the stuff behind you that you didn't think was great. So pleasure to have you, and look, the best of luck in your quarterfinal. And I know you won't see your players now bar Zoom until the 14th of September. So don't get suspended on us.
I'm not. Don't you worry, but I'm not going to. No, I won't. It'll be the 14th. I'll be happy enough. We'll have 4 weeks then, and I'll do the job. Once everyone does the same as well, Anthony, that's the main thing.
That's the one. That's the big thing. Call it out. I said it. I went on RT on Saturday with Colm O'Rourke, which can be intimidating enough at times. And I just said, well, call it out. So, Colm, if we're going making this rule, call it out. There's no point this wishy-washy. We're not calling it out 1 week. We are the following week, but we've depended on clubs now to rat out the counties. And anyway, look, Harrow, we could do another hour on this. But look, come here. Thanks so much for joining us. And again, another podcast done, and I think just another quality listen for the people that are jogging and cycling. And I'll be joining them very soon, or there'll be no getting into suits for Sunday games later on the year. Thanks, lads.
No bother at all, Andy. All the best, lad.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.